KZN's number one way to wake up. Darren, Kerry and Sky, East Coast Radio.
We're doing it differently. Normally we sit down and interview the man, but right now we have him live with us answering your questions. Professor Tulio de Oliveira from CRISP UKZN, virus hunter, informatician. Thank you so much for joining us on East Coast Radio.
Thank you very much and good morning everyone in Durban and KwaZulu-Natal.
Our first caller is Melissa. She has a question for you. Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Darren.
Hi, go ahead for Tulio.
Okay, my question is regarding asthma, okay? I know there's been a lot of research that says asthmatics are at higher risk, but my question is, if you have a child that's on a preventer and the asthma is quite well controlled, should you still be highly stressed about the virus, or can you kind of take a little breather knowing that your child's asthma is under control?
Good question. Prof?
Yes, thank you very much, Melissa. That's a very good question, yeah. And we normally get asked that question many times, yeah. So what the evidence say is that if a child or adult has well-controlled asthma, they have no increase of disease severity due to COVID-ID. What it means? It means that they would be in the same risk as a normal person. So one thing that's very important at the moment, yeah, is that asthmatics should aim for excellent asthma control at this time, yeah? So that's a way that to avoid them, to get complication from COVID, but also avoided anxiety, yeah? Because you don't want to be running out of air because asthma, yeah, and get worried that's COVID. Eh? So the big suggestion, the South Africa Allergy Association, is that it's a very good idea to increase control of asthma, but that asthmatics, people should run a diary, yeah, that they keep all the symptoms that they are experience, yeah. And you can find such a diary online in the Asthma Allergy Foundation of South Africa.
Perfect. Melissa, I hope that answers your question. Prof, we're going to try and get through as many of these questions as we can.
And Prof, we've got a message on our WhatsApp line asking you from Anonymous if you can contract the virus through sex.
Yes. Okay. So that's a very good question. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and was very debated a lot of that, especially in Europe, yeah, around beginning of February, yeah. And the main conclusion that they got, yes, you can get through sex, maybe not through just sexual intercourse, but also from people normally when they are having sex, they're getting very close proximity to each other. And normally this exchange of fluids also from the mouth either or breathing on top of each other. So the answer it is that yes, sexual activity with someone that is positive and shedding virus will increase the chance of someone receiving and acquiring a COVID ID. And one of the big suggestion and in Europe is to people either reduce the number of sex or a case, or maybe do sexual activity alone. And was a big discussion about that. And you're gonna find a lot of material if you look about that on the European guidelines for sexual relationship on coronavirus disease.
So, Prof, I think a part of that question, I'm just waiting to hear if you could fully answer this for me. The exchange of bodily fluids, is it all bodily fluids where the virus can be transmitted, or is it mostly around what would be how you could contract a respiratory disease just through the nose and mouth and that sort of activity?
Okay, so of course that this virus will affect the lungs and will also affect the mouth and all the way to the respiratory tract. So that's where the virus will be in higher viral load. But we also know that the virus can also be found on the stool, yeah. And there is some evidence that may be growing or not, still have to be tested on urine, yeah. So we know that the virus will not only infect the respiratory tract, the upper and the lower respiratory tract, mm-hmm. but that may also infect other organs and maybe also release by stool or maybe even through urine.
All right. So I think if you don't know your partner, you don't have a long-standing relationship, and if you're not in the same pod together, then I would certainly avoid any of that behavior. Maybe you don't want to waste any precious time and you want us to call you back. Just drop us a WhatsApp saying, please call me, and we will call you back if you have a question for Professor Tulio de Oliveira on our WhatsApp line.
061-792-9495.
Karen, Carrie and Sky, East Coast Radio.
And on the line now, we've got Resh. Good morning, Resh.
Good morning, guys. Thank you for taking my
Resh,
call.
Resh, what's your question for Professor?
Okay, my question is regarding the virus being airborne. I've heard so many people telling me so. So does a mask really help, example, while jogging? Or does the virus get airborne and then does it get burned by radiation of the sun and humidity? And how far can it travel?
Huh. Prof?
Okay, yeah, thank you for the questions. There is a few questions there. So let me start answering the most important one. Do masks work? Yeah, and the main answer, it is yes. And we know about that, especially from Asians' experience, not only with coronavirus, but also with other respiratory virus, that using a mask, yeah, it will really reduce the chance of generating what you call droplets when someone is coughing, to generate what we call fomites. That's when a small particle of virus will fall in a surface and someone's gonna put their hand. And also will decrease airborne virus, yeah? So we know that for a long time, especially with the Asian long-term experience with respiratory virus and crowded areas. But a very fascinating study was published a few weeks ago from Germany. And what they did, it is to compare cities that start using masks before other ones at population level. And what they found is that masks can reduce COVID spread by 40%. Yeah. Very important results. Yeah. So making very clear that using a mask will really decrease COVID spread at a population level. The next question that the caller asked, it's about spread of COVID ID in open space, such as you are juggling, yeah? One thing that we also know is that being in open space, yeah, reduce a lot the transmission of the virus, yeah? And there is a number of reasons for that. Once droplets are formed, they tend to fall in the floor, yeah? And there is less contact than if you are in a surface. Imagine in a building, in an office, droplets are generated. They will tend to fall, close to a desk or to a keyboard if you're in front of a computer, yeah? And it is what is building evidence of the aerosol transmission, yeah? And about especially in crowded spaces such as public transports, yeah, such as a tube or a taxi or a bus. So if someone is, should especially use masking, yeah, but it's also to use masks in open space, yeah. And if everyone use a mask and take that more serious, we may see the results as Germany, a reduction of 40% of spread.
Thank you, Professor. We've got another call on the line for you. Haley's here. Haley, good morning. Welcome to the show. Haley, what is your question for Professor?
How's it, Prof? I'd just like to find out, if you get the virus once, are you immune? Or the next time you won't get it as badly, or none of those things?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you for that question. It's a question that it's coming very often. Yeah. And it's what you call in technical terms is like, can you be reinfected with COVID-ID? Yeah. The current evidence, it is, yeah, reinfection, it is not normally happen, or if it happen, is very, what it means, it means infected, it's very unlikely possible to be reinfected with. There is a number of caveats there. The first thing is that we know that the testing is not a perfect testing. Yeah. To know that once a pandemic, a lot of laboratories completely overwhelmed of someone generating what we call a false positive test, quite high. Yeah. What it means, imagine you are in a lab, you receive 20,000 samples in the day and you have to process them. It may happen either a small contamination on the lab or a sample mix up, especially in high volume.
Yeah.
And that someone may get a wrong result first. So that's the first thing. The second thing is what the WHO suggests is that people that have a positive case, in the case again, it can be a false positive, that sometimes they will take much more risk behavior, because they feel protected against the virus.
Professor, but if I can stop you for a second, so we're running out of time, but we have one more question. I just really want to see if you can answer this as briefly as possible, if you can, just about whether the virus is pH sensitive, meaning that if a human body is able to maintain through whatever a pH of 7.4 or above, is it true that the virus will not be able to exist in an alkaline state body?
I honestly don't have information about that. Yeah. And I would be very careful with that kind of facts. Yeah. Because there was a long discussion in the last few years about exactly this alkaline and basic environment with cancer, which led to a lot of people not seeking treatment and end up dying. Yeah. So to the best of my knowledge, there isn't much scientific evidence from that. And I would really try to avoid getting that as a scientific fact virus.
Well, Prof, I'm going to say thank you. We have run out of time. I was hoping we can get through so many questions, and the lines have lit up now suddenly. It's 9 o'clock. We got to go. And the lines have lit up. And I tell you what, leave your WhatsApp questions. You can leave them via text or voice note, and we will make sure to get those questions to the professor. Our WhatsApp line is
061-792-9495.
Professor, thank you once again for chatting to us, and we'll speak again very soon.
Thank you very much, and a lovely day to you, and a lot of masks for the listeners.
100%. Thank you, Prof.
KZN's number one way to wake up. Darren, Carrie and Sky, East Coast Radio.